Welcome to the deep dive.
You know, for thousands of years, the Great Pyramids of Egypt, they've just stood there, these incredible monuments. But how exactly they were built, I mean, 4,500 years ago without modern tech, that's remained one of history's biggest mysteries. So today, we're diving into a really interesting new theory, a very comprehensive one, actually, that claims to finally crack it. It's from Rajan Huda's paper, How the Pyramids Were Built. The theory of the conjoint solution and the shrinking dual L-notch ramps. Quite a title.
It is, yeah. And Huda's goal here is, well, pretty ambitious. He wants to put all those conspiracy theories to bed, basically to give the credit back to the ancient Egyptians where it belongs. He's aiming for what he calls irrefutable proof that fits the historical facts, their known skills. He gives a lot of credit to Dr. Zahi Hawass for being the inspiration behind his work.
Okay, let's just ground ourselves for a second with the Great Pyramid, Khufu's Pyramid. We're talking built around 2550 BC, over 2 million stone blocks. Yeah, and these blocks average, what, 2.5 tons each? That's right, heavy stuff. Originally 481 feet tall, 146.6 meters, and they think it took maybe 23 years. Just to try wrapping your head around that. Yeah. Millions of blocks, heavier than cars, stacked nearly 500 feet high, all by hand, essentially. It's just staggering.
Right. So before we jump into Huda's specific idea, maybe we should quickly touch on why the older theories haven't really, you know, stuck. What were the main problems?
Yeah, that's a good starting point. Because each idea sounds plausible at first, but then you hit these roadblocks. Take levers, for instance. Herodotus mentioned them way back.
Uh-huh.
Levers are great tools, sure, but using them to lift millions of stones consistently, over 400 feet high. How would that even work logistically? It just doesn't seem practical as a main method for the whole structure. Then there's the idea of water, like hydraulic lifts. People have suggested it maybe for earlier pyramids like Saqqara.
Like a water elevator, kind of, yeah. But the thing is, there's zero archaeological evidence for any kind of, you know, big vertical shaft inside the pyramids for this, and no one's really explained the mechanics properly either. Now, ramps. Ramps make intuitive sense. The Egyptians definitely used ramps. Ramps traces have been found at Karnak and also near the Sphinx quarry. Simple ramps built with stone debris, local clay called tafla, mud, pretty basic stuff.
So that naturally led to theories about ramps being used for the pyramids themselves.
Exactly. It seemed like the most logical path. But then you get into the types of ramps, and that's where the problems start.
Okay, let's break those down. The straight exterior ramp is probably the most famous one.
Right. The big one going straight up the side. Problem is, calculations show it would have to be insanely long. Maybe a kilometer.
A kilometer.
Yeah, to get a usable slope. And the amount of material needed for the ramp itself could actually be more than the pyramid. Plus, and this is key, there is absolutely no trace of such a massive ramp. Where did all that material go? And it would have covered up the quarry site too.
Okay, so the giant straight ramp is out. What about using scaffolding to support a ramp?
Even less likely, honestly. You don't see any attachment points on the pyramid faces for massive scaffolding. And could scaffolding back then really hold up under the constant strain of 23 years of dragging multi-ton blocks up hundreds of feet? It just doesn't seem structurally sound.
Then there's the hybrid idea, part straight ramp, part something else.
Yeah, the hybrid ramps, sometimes called an accretion layer ramp. The idea is a straight ramp partway up, then this sort of built-up layer of rubble and earth supporting a ramp wrapping around the pyramid as it got taller. Okay. But the big issue there is control. How do the architects keep the pyramid's angle perfect, keep the faces flat and straight if they're covered by this massive wrapping layer of rubble and earth? It seems like it would make precision almost impossible. And again, at the top, the ramp angle would need to be really steep, like 18 degrees. very tough for hauling.
You mentioned earlier there is evidence of some kind of ramp, though.
Ah, yes, good point. There is evidence of a small supply ramp leading from the quarries towards the southwest corner of Khufu's pyramid. But it looks like it was just a low-level thing, probably for getting stones from the quarry to a staging area near the base.
Not the main construction ramp going all the way up.
Exactly. Not the solution for reaching the higher levels. Its dismantling wouldn't leave a huge footprint either.
Okay, what about moving inside the internal ramp theory? That one got a lot of press.
It did. Yeah. Jean-Pierre Houdin's idea from 2006, a spiral ramp like a tunnel winding up inside the pyramid structure. But again, the evidence isn't there. No archaeological finds, no hints from radiological scans of the inside of the pyramid suggesting this complex internal tunnel system. And it raises questions like, how do you place the outer casing stones accurately from inside a tunnel?
Right, the smooth outer layer.
And the proposed width, maybe 6 feet? That seems really narrow for workers going up and down with sleds. Think about congestion. Plus, lighting, air. For hundreds of workers deep inside, huge logistical hurdles.
So it seems like we've got levers that don't scale. Water systems with no evidence, external ramps that are either too big, too flimsy, or obscure the work, and internal ramps that lack evidence and pose practical problems.
Pretty much. Every idea hits a wall, or several walls.
Which brings us back to Rajan Houda. His solution, he claims, fixes these problems by being, what was it? Both internal and external at the same time. How does that even work?
Yeah, it sounds like a paradox, doesn't it? But it's actually quite, well, elegant when you visualize it. Houda uses an analogy. Imagine a mountain, a natural stone mountain that just happens to be shaped like the Khufu pyramid. Now, if you wanted to build a road for cars to spiral up to the top, you might not build it on the outside. You would cut into the mountain face to create the road.
Blasting a road into the side of the mountain.
Exactly. And when you get to a sharp 90-degree corner, you'd cut deeper, wider to make a smooth curve. The shape of that cut viewed from the side would look like a big L. The road is the bottom flat part, and the vertical rock face you cut is the upright part. That's the concept of the L notch.
Okay, I think I get the L-shape idea from cutting into a mountain. But the Egyptians weren't blasting, so how did they create this L notch on the pyramid itself?
Right. No blasting. They built it layer by layer, remember? About 210 layers. So they lay down level one using those big 4.5-foot stones. But now comes the ingenious solution that Houda defines. They didn't complete one corner of level one. They deliberately left a rectangular gap, maybe 10 feet wide by 25 feet long, something like that.
Intentionally left it unfinished.
Exactly. And in that gap, they built a small ramp section, just a simple ramp, maybe 10 feet wide, sloping up from the ground level to the top surface of level one. Probably a gentle slope, like 10 degrees. Okay, now here's the internal external part. This ramp is built within the pyramid's final footprint, so it's technically internal. But there's open air above the ramp, making it effectively external too.
I see. Internal footprint, external access.
Precisely. Then, Houda explains, they use that first ramp section to haul up the stones for level two. As they build level two, they again leave a gap in the corner right above the first ramp. Then they build the next ramp section in that new gap, extending from the top of level one to the top of level two.
And they just repeat that process.
Iteratively, layer by layer, all the way up. The ramp grows with the pyramid, always staying within the footprint, but open to the sky. And at the actual 90-degree corners of the pyramid, they'd make that L notch deeper and taller, creating a wider, curved turning area, so even the big stones on sleds could make the corner smoothly.
That makes sense for getting stones up. But you mentioned the scale earlier. Millions of stones, thousands of workers. Wouldn't one ramp, even this clever L-notch ramp, still be a huge traffic jam?
That's a very sharp observation, and Huda addresses that directly. He proposes they didn't build just one ramp, they built two.
Two ramps.
Yes, one main ascending ramp, maybe the 10-foot-wide one we discussed, spiraling up anti-clockwise, let's say, and then a second, separate ramp used only for workers and empty sleds coming back down. Ugh, a dedicated downlane.
Exactly. Think about efficiency and safety. Trying to manage two-way traffic on one ramp, even a wide one, would be chaotic, dangerous even. And making one super wide ramp would cut a massive chunk out of the pyramid corner, making it harder to finish later.
Okay, so separate ramps, like a one-way system.
A human-powered conveyor belt, as Huda calls it. The descending ramp could be narrower too, maybe just 6 feet wide, like a path, and strategically placed, perhaps just behind the main ascending ramp, slightly offset. That way, if anything fell, it wouldn't land on the busy upward path. Also, workers coming down would end up right back at the staging area, ready for the next load. Very efficient.
This dual L-notch ramp system sounds elegant and, well, effective. But it leads straight back to the old problem. If these ramps were the key, why is there no evidence? Not a trace.
And here's where the theory gets really, really interesting, because Huda says this is the only method that itself guarantees there's no evidence left behind. It's designed to vanish without a trace.
Remember how the L-notch was created? Not by destroying anything, but by not building certain parts. By leaving gaps where stones should have been.
Right, incomplete construction.
So once they reach the very top, place the final capstone, maybe level 209 or so, they started dismantling the ramps.
But they did it systematically from the top down, one level at a time. As they removed the ramp materials from the gap at, say, level 208, they then filled that gap with the proper core blocks and casing stones that belong there, and any stones from levels above that rested on that section could now be placed too.
So they're basically completing the pyramid structure as they remove the ramp.
Exactly. They repeat this process, working from the top down, dismantling one ramp level at a time, then putting in the missing stone pieces to finish that level, and then starting on removing the ramp on the next level down. Working one level at a time, this process is repeated from the top all the way down to level one, filling in the gaps, placing the final stones level by level. The smaller descending ramp would probably be removed earlier, maybe once the stones got small enough near the top that the main ramp could handle two-way traffic for a bit. When they reached the bottom and filled in the last gap, all the stones were exactly where they should be, as if the ramps had never existed.
Wow. So the construction method literally erases itself as the final step.
Leaving no trace, Huda calls this methodological invisibility.
This theory also tackles yet another big, historically unanswered question about the pyramids, something you can easily see if you look closely. The stones aren't uniform, are they?
No, they're not. And that's a crucial part of Huda's argument, what he calls the conjoint solution. The stones at the base are huge, like we said, maybe 4.5 feet high. But as you go up, they get noticeably smaller. Near the top, they might only be 1.5 feet high.
Which seems odd. The Egyptians were famous for precision, perfectionism. Why make this kind of visual compromise? Why not use the big stones all the way up?
The simple answer people often give is, well, smaller stones are easier to push up high.
Makes sense on the surface.
But Huda argues against that. He says, look, these guys were perfectionists. They had tons of labor. The really hard work wasn't pulling stones up a ramp. It was quarrying them and hauling them to the site in the first place. If they made a design choice this obvious, it wasn't just for convenience. It must have been a forced choice, something they had to do.
Okay, so what forced this choice?
Huda explains that it was physics, geometry, really. As the pyramid gets taller, each level has a smaller square footprint than the one below it. It tapers inwards. Now imagine you're near the very top. The available building area on that level is tiny. If you tried to build your standard 10-foot wide L-notched ramp around the edge of that tiny square, the ramp itself might take up the entire footprint. There'd be no space left to actually build the next level up.
The ramp would consume the building space.
Exactly. The only way to continue building upwards was to make the ramp narrower as it got higher. The L-notch ramp had to shrink in width along with the pyramid's shrinking footprint at the highest levels.
And narrower ramps mean?
Narrow ramps mean you can only safely push smaller blocks up them. You can't maneuver the giant 4.5-foot blocks on a shrinking width ramp near the summit. So they were forced to use smaller blocks. And to keep it looking symmetrical and intentional, they gradually reduced the block size all the way from the bottom up.
So the shrinking ramps necessitated the smaller stones. It wasn't just about making it easier.
Precisely. The shrinking L-notch ramps and the smaller stones are two sides of the same coin, a linked solution driven by the pyramid's own geometry. That's what Huda calls the conjoint solution. Huda here states something truly remarkable. He says the pyramid's construction method was basically imprinted in its very design for everyone to see, yet remained unseen for 4,500 years. Its greatest secret was boldly hidden in plain sight.
Wow! For the first time in history, for Huda to discover that connection between the shrinking footprint, the shrinking ramps, and the shrinking stones is, well, it's simply astounding. But let's think about the impact. What did this forced design compromise, as Huda called it, actually cost the Egyptians?
This is another completely fascinating layer to Huda's theory, and yet another, as of yet undiscovered, aspect of the pyramid's construction challenge brought to light for the first time in history by Huda. He shows that choosing smaller stones had implications that were actually quite significant and negative, especially for their most critical workers. How? Well, think about the different labor groups, the thousands of unskilled guys pulling ropes. Egypt had plenty of those. They were well-fed, housed, motivated, not a bottleneck. Wood craftsmen making sleds, similar situation, existing skills, not a bottleneck. But for the most skilled workers, that's different. Take the stone cutters in the quarries. Scarce, valuable skill. Now, cutting one big 4.5-foot block might involve, say, six main cuts. One cut for each of the six sides of the rectangular stone blocks. But to get the same volume of stone using smaller 1.5-foot blocks for the upper levels, the cutter has to make more blocks. Three smaller 1.5-foot blocks instead of one big 4.5-foot block. That could mean going from six cuts to nine cuts, two extra horizontal cuts, and one extra vertical cut to create the three smaller blocks. That's a huge jump, like a huge 50% increase in workload for these critical guys.
Wow, 50% more cutting work just because the stones had to be smaller.
And Huda shows how it gets even worse for the most skilled, scarcest workers. The stonemasons. The ones who finish the blocks, ground the surfaces smooth, ensure the perfect fit. Their speed basically dictated the project timeline.
The stonemasons were the bottleneck.
Absolutely. Now, a single large block has six surfaces to finish, but if you cut that large block into, say, three smaller ones to get the required size for higher up, each new cut creates two new surfaces that need finishing by the stonemasons.
Oh, right. Every single cut creates two new surfaces for the stonemason to finish.
Exactly. So Huda shows, for the first time, the dramatically negative implications of using smaller stone blocks for the higher levels. Making those three smaller blocks instead of one big one results in 12 surfaces to be finished instead of six, effectively doubling the finishing work for the stonemasons. A 100% increase in workload for the absolute most critical time-limiting workers on the entire project.
Now Huda uncovers the most dramatic implication of this choice. The implication for the architects. The architects knew that using smaller stones higher up, which they had to do because of the shrinking ramps, would dramatically increase the workload for their most vital, skilled labor, the cutters, and especially the masons, which means they knowingly chose a path that would significantly delay the pyramid's completion and increase the risk of the pharaoh, you know, not living to see it finished.
Huda points directly to the fact that the architects likely felt they had no other choice. The shrinking L-notch ramps necessitated by the pyramid's geometry forced the use of smaller stones. The massive increase in skilled labor time was the unavoidable price they paid. Huda states that this dramatically significant forced design compromise, with all its negative consequences, is perhaps the strongest, most irrefutable evidence that the shrinking L-notch ramps and the conjoint solution must have been the only possible method of construction for the architects. Why else make a choice that makes the hardest parts of the job even harder and take longer?
It paints a picture of necessity driving innovation, even at great cost. Okay, this is incredibly detailed and well thought through theory. So if this theory seems to tick all the boxes, explains the construction, the lack of evidence, the shrinking stones, the forced compromises, why did it take 4,500 years for someone to figure this out?
Huda answers this question directly. He outlines 9 remarkable and unique features of the construction methodology he has outlined, which come together synergistically to form the complete solution to this remarkable 4,500-year-old unsolved construction mystery. If past researchers tried to solve the pyramid construction mystery without recognizing all of these 9 aspects of the problem would essentially become unsolvable. This is why this problem remained unsolved for 4,500 years. Let's look closely at these 9. Okay, first, the remarkable efficiency. No massive external ramp to build and dismantle. Everything happens within the footprint using the L-notch ramp. Second, the elegant simplicity. L-notch ramps are small ramps, and it's just repeating a simple ramp section over and over. Third, the simple logistics. Those separate up-down ramps create that smooth conveyor belt flow. Fourth, the innovation of the combined internal-external L-notch ramp itself. Fifth, and maybe most importantly, that methodological invisibility we talked about. People were looking for physical leftovers, not a method designed to vanish, right?
Right, looking for the wrong thing.
Sixth, it allowed full visibility for the architects. Unlike wrapping ramps, the L-notch kept the corners and faces clear for maintaining precise 90-degree angles and ensuring smooth, flat pyramid faces. Seventh, the remarkable conjoint solution. It uniquely explains the shrinking ramps as a solution to the shrinking footprint problem.
And the eighth point must be the stone sizes.
Exactly. Eighth, it explains the significant design compromise of smaller stones as a forced consequence, linking it directly to the increased workload and risk, making it powerful, irrefutable evidence. And finally, ninth, previous researchers had an incomplete problem definition. Now, let us come to the most remarkable aspect of Huda's research. Of the 9 problem elements he has identified above as what is needed to answer the construction mystery, possibly as many as 7 of them have never been recognized or even identified as important components of the pyramid construction problem solution in the past 4,500 years of pyramid history or research. By never recognizing many aspects of this remarkable construction puzzle, the problem thus became impossible to solve over the past 4,500 years.
The whole picture remained elusive.
Precisely. These 9 points, Huda argues, fit together perfectly, providing that comprehensive and irrefutable proof for the theory of the conjoint solution and the shrinking dual L-notch ramps.
Huda states that this work has been a labor of love of his for more than 50 years, as he struggled to solve this intricate three-dimensional puzzle. He developed this theory piece by piece as each of the different 9 aspects of the problem slowly revealed themselves to him and set him on a path to address each newly discovered aspect of the construction puzzle. Slowly, as more pieces of the problem fell into place, the overall solution also started to emerge. Now, after more than 50 years of struggling with this challenge, he felt comfortable with writing up his solution and sharing it. He hopes this will put an end to all the conspiracy theories about pyramid construction, including Elon Musk's allegation about alien construction. Huda wants the credit, respect, and honor for these amazing creations to be fully and unequivocally restored to the rightful genius of its creators, the ancient Egyptians. The Great Pyramids, they've always inspired this sense of awe, haven't they? And somehow, now understanding how they might have been built, it doesn't take away the magic. If anything, it deepens the respect for the sheer ingenuity and creativity involved.
Absolutely. I mean, think about it. They figured out how to build something on that scale that perfectly 45 centuries ago, a construction puzzle that stumped pretty much all of humanity for 4,500 years. Until perhaps now, it's humbling.
It really is a truly humbling thought, and it gives you a whole new appreciation for what Huda has achieved. His tenacity, ingenuity, imagination, and ability to see what no one else could see is truly extraordinary. It makes you wonder, doesn't it, what other ancient secrets, what other strokes of genius might still be out there hidden in plain sight, just waiting for us to look at them in the right way.